straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 210, brought to you by Bud Light at Hook'em.com. Cedric Golden here with my boy the Duck, Kirk Bowles, and we got a jam-packed podcast today, Duck. We're fresh out of the winter storm. We've got Vic Schaefer coming up, the Texas women's coach. We're going to talk a little bit of Tiger Woods and what happened during the week of the great Texas blizzard. But first, the Fighting Shaka Smarts, 75, the Kansas Jayhawks, 72. In overtime, the Texas Longhorns take out KU in what was, to me, the biggest win of Shaka Smart's Texas tenure. What say you?
Well, now, why are you dissing on the NIT championship? They got a banner.
Huge. I know he's a national champion. I know he's a national champion, Duck. I know that. I know he's a national champion, and I'm not trying to denigrate him winning a national championship. But I mean, little old me, I know I'm old school. I think two regular season wins over the Kansas Jayhawks ranks over that historical, monumental national invitational tournament championship win. That's just me.
I just seem to sense a little bit of cynicism. Not very much, just a little bit of cynicism. But no, you're right. It's a monumental milestone for Shaka to sweep Kansas. Like only the second team to have done that since 2004, and the first Texas team to ever do that. It's funny, Sid, you and I both, you know, watched the game Tuesday night and wrote about it. And then I was watching a 10-minute post game with Bill Self, and he hardly even mentions Texas. You know, we did this. Oh, Dave McCormick fouled out, and you know, we had to play small without him on the bench and foul trouble. And, you know, we did have the lead in overtime, and we were able to force it to go to overtime. But he never mentioned Texas, never mentioned he lost twice to them. And he came out very smug, not very humble.
It's not about Texas. And here's the one thing about Bill Self.
Yeah.
Bill Self is effusive in his praise of an opponent after he beats them. They beat Texas here a couple of years ago, and it's almost like, man, Texas is going to be a Final Four team in a year or so, the way he was talking.
Yeah.
But when you beat Bill Self twice, and this is not a typical Bill Self Kansas team.
Oh, no, not even close.
They've done great just to get this thing back on the tracks because they were headed to nowhere fast. And then they caught fire. So just speaks to how great a coach he is. But it doesn't surprise me that Texas wasn't mentioned as much because he doesn't want to spend too much time on getting swept by Shaka Smart.
He didn't spend any time, not much time. He spent no time giving Shaka credit. And that's why Shaka deserves credit. And let's be real, okay? This is not a vintage Kansas team.
No.
But to me, this is a very good Texas team.
Yes.
It's not a great Texas team, but it's very good.
Easily his best team.
His sixth year, easily his best. And the thing I love about this team is that they can beat you in different ways. Now, you and I both know the guards are the heart and soul. They run this team, and you got to have guards to win in college basketball, especially in March. We know all that. But you look at the big guy, Jericho Sims, his defense and rebounding, you know, his defense on Culver against West Virginia on McCormick Tuesday night. Kai Jones is just a freak. you know, just waiting to explode.
Did you see him after he hit the deck and he did the jump up, the gymnastic jump up at 6'11"?
Just jumped up. It was like, it was such a YouTube moment. I can't believe that hadn't gone viral already.
He probably made himself another $2 million by doing that. Some scout goes, did you see that? Did you see what he could do?
I mean, I know you can do that, but it's very rare for most human beings to be able to get off the floor like that, where he just kind of bent himself and contorted himself and just leaped up. I mean, what a high jumper he must have been. I know he's a long jumper, high jumper, and didn't even play junior high basketball. But, I mean, the guy's a freak. Greg Brown, two big threes coming out of halftime.
And didn't play a whole lot down the stretch. And I'm going to tell you,
right,
just a genius move by Shaka. The kid found his stroke. Boy, and he's been missing a lot lately.
He
found his stroke. And gave them that energy coming out of the locker room. But down the stretch, Shaka said, I'm going with my OGs. I'm going with Andrew Jones. I'm going with Courtney Ramey. I'm going with Matt Coleman, Jericho Sims. And I'm going to put the lengthy, long Ty Jones with a mix, with a little touch of Brock Cunningham, who was amazing. One of the best scoreless performances in the history of this program. Amazing performance by Brock.
He gets rebounds in his sleep. He knows positions. He's got that scrappiness. It's like a Dennis Rodman, like laser-like focus on how to get that rebound. He knows his role. But when they had a little dip, though, there in the second half. I forget at what point where – you know, Kai Jones did something bad. Brock took a three, and Brock Cunningham took two threes. They left him open.
Of course they did.
You're open for a reason. And then I thought, oh, boy, these are bad shot selections. But you're right. They got something from everybody. And that's what I really like about this team. And they believe in themselves. But they needed that. I know when you talked, when you asked Shaka in the post game, did you need this for reinforcement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you talk about needing this win, I love what you asked him right after the game, because it was a real important question leading into where they're going right now. Take a listen to what Duck said here.
Shaka, with some of the really tough home losses that y'all have had the last couple of weeks, was this game important to kind of re-find yourself and rebrand yourself? And is this kind of a game you can call on once the NCAA tournament and Big 12 tournament start?
Yeah, I think absolutely, Kirk. It was very important for that. It's one of those games that I'm surprised I didn't get this question the other day at our media availability. It's one of those games sometimes you guys ask, is this a must-win? And of course, before the game, you can't necessarily admit that because you don't want to put that pressure on your players, and you don't want them playing with avoidance. But I did feel, we kind of felt that a little bit over these last couple of days, like we got to get this one because that last one got away from us. And, you know, we're going on the road after this and it's our senior night and we're never going to forget senior night. And so, obviously, the game could have gone either way down the stretch. But I really give our guys a ton of credit for hanging in there because we had a lot of balls that went in and out, some stuff that didn't go our way on offense, but we kept defending.
So he knows that he needed the game. And to admit that it was a must win, I mean, come on.
When's the last time a coach ever did that? But
they always say it after they win. They'll never say it. I'll never say it after a loss. Well, that was a must win. We're done now. We can shut it down.
He was very candid, very honest. It really was. And you and I like Shaka. You know, we've tried to get him.
Always have.
And he's a good guy. He's a guy you'd want to have a beer with and just watch an NCAA tournament basketball game. He's a good guy. He cares about his team. And, you know, and he's fiery. You know, you remember after the first few years, we're saying get more involved, and you know, he'd get down there in the crouch on the sideline sometime, beat on the floor, and boy, this year he's really gotten fiery.
Getting after the refs. Some really bad calls.
Yeah.
Jericho's fouled at the end of the West Virginia game, and they don't call it. The Big 12 officials haven't been good this year, Doug.
It was terrible Tuesday night.
Really
it?
Terrible. Some bad – the Kai Jones traveling call was horrible.
Ball foul.
Yeah. But Matt Coleman thought he had an and one, and you literally heard him yell it, and one, and they call him for traveling. And I'm like, where are these calls coming from? And
that was bad. That was bad.
And I don't think the refs were biased. I just think they're bad. They were bad.
Yeah, I thought they just had a bad night. And I just think, this was a really big game for them because, it reinforced to them that, yeah, we really are that team that got to number four in the nation. We were still and still are that team that could – flirt with being a number two seed. They won't
very be. Dangerous. Very dangerous group.
If they could close strong, they could get to be, a three or four seed before it's all over. Now, I know you asked Shaka about what they have facing them the rest of this regular season.
Shaka, there just aren't any nights off in the Big 12. K-State beat Oklahoma tonight, and Iowa State nearly beat Baylor. How much confidence did you have to get from this game knowing – the gauntlet that you guys are facing starting with Tech on Saturday?
Well, Cedric, I think definitely you can take some confidence. We can take some confidence from this game, but I think even more so it's a feeling of all the commitment and work and buy-in that goes into even having a chance to win a game like this is worth it, because if you don't win the game, and again, if you don't have, years and years of maturity, then there can be a little bit of a tendency of, man, we just lost a close one against West Virginia. So you need to win to reinforce, yeah, this is why we do this. We're gonna pay the price either way. We're gonna pay it on the front end with work and discipline and togetherness and buy into one common goal, or we're going to pay on the back end with regret. One way or the other, we're going to pay. And I think winning the game helps you understand as a young person that, man, it's a lot better to pay on the front end and feel good on the back end.
And, Duck, with that gauntlet they've got coming up at Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Iowa State, TCU, all on the road.
Oh.
My thought is if they can figure out a way to split those four games,
yep.
If they can win two of those four, and they'll be prohibitive favorites even on the road against scrappy TCU and a bad Iowa State team, which almost beat Baylor.
Yep.
So Iowa State's not a pushover even at, 2-17? Oh, my God, what a bad year that is.
Wow.
But if they can figure out a way to win two of those four games, and that will put them at what in conference? They are 8-5 now, so 10-7.
Uh huh.
So it's not bad. It's not bad.
Kansas has what, six losses in the league? So It's funny because when I asked Matt Coleman Tuesday night, does this have a feel of an NCAA tournament game? And he said, no, it was like a Big 12 game.
He said, that's respect, like, man.
Every game. There is like that. I mean, that's the other thing that's really going to keep them in good stead going into March is that there are no nights off in the Big 12. You got to take everybody seriously. You just mentioned Iowa State nearly knocking off Baylor, undefeated Baylor. So, yeah, I think this competition, and they may not see this type of competition in the NCAA tournament the first couple games. And I don't think there are many.
Slow down. Let's just say the first game. Got to get through that first one before we start talking about the second one. Because it's not like they've been just a mainstay in the NCAAs. Let's get through that first game and see what happens after that, Doug.
Yeah, you can tell Shaka was just thrilled beyond words Tuesday night.
I'm glad you said that because I want to play this clip. Brian Davis asked him, right at the end of the presser, and just to kind of summarize how he was feeling at the time. Take a listen.
After sweeping Kansas,
yeah.
Shaka, I can't let you get away without asking, what does this mean personally to you to sweep Kansas. And this is the first time Texas has ever done this since joining the Big 12.
Thanks for asking that, Brian. you know, in this league, they obviously have been the class of the league for a long, long time. And, you know, this year, obviously, Baylor's the best team in the league without question. But Kansas over time has just been phenomenal. I remember, Brian, the first year I was here, we went up there, Isaiah Taylor, Connor Lambert, that group. And we're up 5 points at the half. And we're walking from the court into the towards the locker room. And Jay Lucas grabs me and he says, "Coach, you got to convince these guys that we can win." And I said, "Jay, what are you talking about? We're up five. It's like 35-31 or 35, whatever it was." And he was exactly right. I went in the locker room and I kind of saw this look on their face of, you know, well, we're up. Does that mean we're going to win? Or, and man, it's like clockwork. They made a run mid second half and, you know, they win the game. And how many times has that happened against these guys? You know, so as a coach, you're like, we got to get over the hump with that. So it means a lot to win both games, but you know, who knows, maybe we'll play them again in the conference tournament. And, you know, more importantly, I think it's to Cedric's point, a really big step for our team, the way we responded. But, you know, certainly with the success that they've had in this league over for a long, long time, you know, if there's anyone you could pick to win a couple games against in the first half, it'd probably be in the first in the regular season, it would be them.
I hear Giddy Shaka there.
Absolutely.
He's giddy.
He is giddy.
He's no giddy question. There. And I'm like, oh, wow. Easily just, I know for coaches coached in the Final Four, he hasn't tasted wine that sweet in quite some time. And on a night when they only made like five threes, Andrew Jones has really struggled with his shot. And people got mad at me on Twitter, but he, at one point before he made a couple of shots, dating back to the West Virginia game, after the little scrum with Courtney Ramey, he was 1 out of 17.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying that that had anything to do with it, but after that scrum, he just hasn't been the scoring machine that we've become accustomed to. And he's turning the ball over. And I still think these guards are way too careless with the ball.
They are.
Think they can go through double teams. And Matt Coleman and Courtney Ramey are great young players, but they are they overreach on how quick they are, and they think they can get by these guys. And Kansas was ripping them both. So moving forward, they got to be a little bit more careful with the ball.
Yeah, their on-ball defense wasn't good in that first half against Kansas. I mean, you know, Christian Brown and Garrett and Wilson were getting to the basket. And
Obachi was hitting those threes.
He was sitting in that corner all alone. And I know Greg Brown was supposed to be on him, and he was slow getting out there. And that's another reason I think they got Cunningham more playing time. But you mentioned Andrew Jones. Is there any worry there that something's going on with Andrew? Because is it just a cold spell, you think?
It's just a cold spell. I think, you know, he's fine. His health is fine, I'm sure. And he doesn't look fatigued, but he's just not making shots. And he short-armed a couple of threes. He missed a wide-open dagger three near the end of regulation that would have put them up by five in the last minute. And that would have been a wrap, in my opinion. And they're still looking for him. Credit to Courtney and Matt. They still have confidence in him, and they're still getting him looks. I think those looks will eventually start to fall again. But, he just seems a little bit rushed and a little bit unsure of himself. This is a mental thing with Andrew, not physical.
Remember, he had a chance to close out the West Virginia game. Remember, he had that open shot on the perimeter.
Yeah. That would put him up. And I tweeted it. He got to the free throw line a couple of times, and I said, you know what? Andrew Jones got to the line, knocked down two free throws. Sometimes, and I was texting with our buddy Mark Rosner, And I told him, I said, you for a scorer, getting to the line and knocking down a couple of shots is sometimes an ignition switch. That's all you need is to see that ball go through the hoop. And then he did, to his credit, come down and hit a three right after that. He and did. I think it was his only three of the game. But I think he's going to have to get going. If they're going to have any chance against Texas Tech, you can't put it all on Jericho, Matt and Courtney. Boy, but I will say Courtney Ramey the last couple of games has been electric. He's been great. He's been great.
This is the time when you want them to be at their best. I want to touch on two things that you said. Andrew Jones still getting to the free throw line. They had 24 points at the charity line, 24 out of 31. And that's a big reason they won that game. Listen to the free throws. Andrew Jones, 6 for 6. Matt Coleman, 5 of 8. Courtney Ramey, 8 of 8. Greg Brown, 3 of 4. That was so huge that, you know, it allowed them to get back in that game in the second half.
And this is the same team that went 3 of 14 from the line in a loss earlier this year. Was that the Oklahoma State loss? Or
I think so, because nothing happened well in the Oklahoma State. You remember they didn't score in 2 overtimes. They went 8-12 from the field in that game. And then you mentioned Texas Tech. They're scuffling a little bit. I think they've lost, you see, 3 in a row or 3 out of the last 4. And I don't love this Texas Tech team.
But I don't either. I don't
Max
either.
McClung's very good. Shannon, a pro prospect, turned Shannon. But I don't know. It's not a typical Chris Beard. Like we were saying, it's not a vintage Kansas team. It's not a vintage Chris Beard team either. David Moretti left and took some experience with him back to Italy. And
huge.
But you know what? It's a must win for Chris Beard.
Chris Beard needs this one. And yeah. It's going to – I can't wait to see it. I just think it's going to be a it's going to be a barn burner. These two teams are made for one another. They play really good games. They've had some good finishes in the past. I know Matt Coleman's got some demons that he'd like to exercise out in Lubbock, and there's a lot of good storylines coming out of this game. If Shaka Smart can beat Texas Tech, and that's back, that would be back-to-back wins against ranked teams. Yeah. Then the ship is officially back on course. This kind of just calmed the waters a little bit. Yeah. Now let's see if we are witnessing a Texas program on the ascent. If they get this big time win in Lubbock, and let's just say it, they finished 2021 5-4 at home, Duck. This was not a home court advantage for them.
No,
it just wasn't. So
no, there are no fans until Tuesday night, you know.
Exactly.
So no, you're right. It did calm the waters, and I think it restores their confidence, which is a very big component, I think, especially when they're about to go on the road for this extended time.
On Second Thought.
Duck, always a pleasure to have Texas women's basketball coach Vic Schaefer on with us. At the time of this recording, the Longhorns are preparing for a game at Kansas, and then they finish up the regular season with Oklahoma, Baylor, TCU. Not exactly an easy path to the conference tournament. How are you today, Coach?
And I'm great. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Man, this has been a season like another, as you've said many times. Is this wear you down a little bit as a coach, Vic?
Well, I think what wears you down is just, you know, I'm a worrier, and I constantly worry about my team, my kids, my staff, more than anything, because, you know, ultimately I feel like I'm responsible for all of it. And, you know, I'm just so proud of everybody. You know, we've been really fortunate that we've not really been hit with the COVID issue during the season. Other than we had one student athlete come back from Christmas. Other than that, we've managed to dodge it pretty well. And my staff has too. So, you know, but, you know, last week, as you know, it was just it's just something we don't experience in Texas. And, really, that was a whole nother thing to worry about for 4 days, traveling with kids and staff and just making sure they got food and water. I mean, the things we take for granted, guys, is last week comes in full circle, you know. And, you know, I think we're still boiling water at my house.
It's been an education, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah. Interesting when you're breaking down tape in your car at a parking lot in a pizza joint. So it's it's not in the kitchen manual.
Packed that night. I was tired of eating whatever I'd eaten all week. And Holly had told me, she said, hey, we got peanut butter and chips Friday night. We had just gotten power back on at the house that day, but we had no groceries. We lost everything in our refrigerator and freezer. And of course, no water. She says, we got peanut butter and jelly and we got chips. She said, that's for dinner. I said, honey, I can't do it. And Blair had told me that Cane's was open and there were some other things down on MLK that were open on Martin Luther King. So I said, you know, I'm going to drive through that district, you know, that area, and I'm going to see what's open. And so, and I pulled down to the light and I looked over there at Papa John's and it was SRO over there, man. It was standing room only. They were packed inside there. And then I looked across the street at Domino's and it was worse. And Cane's was closed. I really had my mind set up. I was ready to eat some chicken. I love fried chicken.
I love Raising Cane's. I love it. Oh.
So anyway, I was disheartened when I drove through the parking lot of Cane's. And so I parked at the 7-Eleven and got out and walked into the Papa John's and waited about 15 minutes to order. And when I got there, the guy said, hey, all I got is thin crust. Is that okay? I said, man, I don't care. I'm fine with that.
Now, eat the cardboard.
He said, he'd be ready in 30 minutes. I said, I'll be in the car watching film. When I walked in there, there was nobody left in there. And I was going to pick up the pizza and he was out of product.
Wow.
And as I walked out, there was a U-Haul backing up to the front door and it was from Killeen with dough and product for him to open back up.
Yeah, like we were back in the dark ages. It's been truly amazing. So, well, you're sitting here, like Seth said, you're down to the last three or four games. You're sitting here 15-6, 9-5 going into the Kansas game. I was going to ask you, are you where you thought you might be? But I know you're better than that. You're such a perfectionist. You want to win them all. So how realistically would you say where you're at in the season and where you thought you'd be?
Well, you know, again, coming in and not having seen much film, you know, and not having any, you know, we had basically one starter, one and a half starters back, Charlie and Celeste.
Right.
I mean, our next player that played any significant minutes was Joanne. You know, Audrey didn't play, but in 16 games. And so realistically, and then knowing that your recruiting class is five freshmen, and that's the depth of your team is those, you know, kids not real, you know, really not thinking that Lauren would be eligible. She was going to have to sit. So, you know, obviously you're right. I want to win them all and we coach them every day to win them all. But to be where we are right now, knowing, you know, we certainly have some limitations and we certainly have depth issues and, you know, we're not shooting the ball well, y'all. We don't have a guard shooting 40% on our roster.
It's hard to win.
You know, even Charlie and Lauren are now below 50%. And our goal is, you know, we want our post players shooting 60% or better, and we want our guards shooting 45. And you know, I think both of them have dropped just below 50. And so, you know, I give our kids a lot of credit because, you know, for us, we're not going to win the 90-88 game. We got to keep the score, you know, manageable because, you know, we're just – offensively we can really struggle sometimes. And so you know, hey, I've won a lot of games with teams like this, but you got to really be a tough, physical, aggressive basketball team, and you got to want to defend every possession because you know in your heart of hearts we've got to defend to have a chance to win.
Yeah, you mentioned Celeste. She had some big offensive games last season as her first year, but She just seemed to have struggled from the perimeter, and I've seen her in about three games. It just seems like she's rushing things. She gets the ball and just puts her head down and drives to the hole. Where is she in the area, in your opinion, of letting the game come to her? Because I know, just like you, she's a perfectionist, and I think sometimes she's probably guilty of trying too hard.
Yes, Senator, you're right. That's a kid that's highly motivated, and I think she's close. I've seen her now in practice, and last shoot around we had for K-State, she missed many. And so I think she's getting close. You know, she had the injury earlier in the year that really set her back and wasn't able to do much for a while. And so I think she's getting back, you know, and I think she's getting close. But we talk about a kid that wants to win and an unbelievable competitor and plays really hard. I mean, she's my kind of player. She's going to be great for us in the future. There's no doubt in my mind. She's going to – the more comfortable she gets and understands, you know, exactly what we want and how we want it. I love coaching a kid, and she's a great kid. And, again, my kind of player.
Did you get her to sink some free throws? That would help too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, and that's the strange things. I mean, she's got a good-looking shot, and it comes off good. But, you know, she is struggling from the free throw line, and that's crazy to think that.
Yeah. What as far as your bench, you've kind of shortened your rotation, have you not? And, you know, you got some scrappers, and I don't know how you deal with COVID, fatigue, stamina, stuff like that. But is this about the time when you know who you want out on the floor for the majority of the minutes? So does that bench get shortened?
I think it has. It has for a couple of reasons. One, we've had, you know, we've got Deanna and Alyssa over there who aren't available. Right. Played earlier in the year, had season-ending surgery on her shin. Alyssa has never been, she had the injury before she really started practicing. Shay's been hobbled with some ankle issues, and so she's really limited, and she's trying to battle through it. But she actually has a little bit of a torn, ligament in her ankle. So she's trying to get through that, and so, you know, we you're right, you know, that bench is shortened up a little bit, but our kids are, they're in great shape. And they would tell you that they're in the best shape of their life. And that's what you get when you play for us. We're going to make sure you're at a top level of conditioning and fitness, and because of the way we like to play. And I think our kids have really embraced our style. You know, when you start talking to them, okay, you want to, you know, we've got this issue with our depth a little bit. You know, do you want to back off and maybe not press? And they're like, no, coach, that's who we are. That's how we're going to win. Let's go get them. And, you know, when you got kids that'll do that, you're winning the battle. So I'm excited about that. And, again, that's part of the growth of our program.
Charlie Carrier is one of the best players in the country, no question. Just a rebounding machine, and rebounders get paid on the next level, and that's why she's getting props as potentially the number one overall pick if she decides to come out for the WNBA draft. We do know Baylor's the measuring stick, and she had her struggles 0-for-3 with 2 points before fouling out. What went wrong up in Waco with her and overall, and how much do you have to do to get that gap lesson, because frankly that's why you're here, Vic, to get closer to Baylor and to get after Moki and those Lady Bears.
Yeah, well, and Senator Bob, we're here to beat them. I mean, it ain't about getting close, you know, it's real clear to me, and we understand that, and we embrace that. But you know, there's a lot of other teams in this league that you got to deal with too to beat, and you know, we've, like I said, with this group, with our limitations, I think we've made some strides, and I'm proud of how these kids have developed. I think that's one thing my staff and I are really proud of. And one thing that we're known for is we develop kids. And, you know, Charlie, what happened in Waco, probably two things. I mean, one, they obviously, you know, they made it a point to really try to take her away. And then two, because of the rebounding issue that you have with them, and we still got out rebounded 20, but I played the big lineup quite a bit. And when I did that, that puts her in a different position on the floor. And it's not something that we've played enough of. So in her defense, it was just it was a little bit different. Now, you know, I think she'll tell you she learned some things and can see some things on film that she can probably do better. But in her defense, you know, that big lineup, it took her away from the rim a little bit because Lauren was down there, and Lauren battled her rear off all night long rebound. She was really our only rebounder.
I like her soft hands. Yeah.
Went on four every time for the most part all night long. And so, I think you got to give Baylor credit for really doing paying a lot of attention to Charlie. And then our lineup, you know, because we were trying to rebound with them and defend them. And I, from that standpoint, I think the big lineup really worked in that we held them to, you know, 60 points. I think that's their lowest point total of the year. And, held them to 8 points in the third quarter. I mean, I think we were effective defensively, but then it did some other things to us. Now, we missed a ton of shots, Cedric. I mean, we got paint shots all night long. We just couldn't score. And each team provides a different challenge and you have to attack them a different way. Every night's not the same. You know, you play that big lineup against the zone, those two kids are in different spots and they're a lot more comfortable where they are versus you play that big lineup against a man and you got a real athletic, quick team out there defending you and a big physical team defending you inside. That's a completely different deal. And so, again, we're young. I mean, Charlie's played 1 year, really. She didn't play a lot her freshman year. Played last year. This is now her second year. So, you know, all of our kids are still young, inexperienced. We have some maturity, lack of maturity issues. That's not uncommon. Charlie's going to be fine. She rebounded great against K-State, 21-14. She's really having an incredible year. I mean, she's an incredible type and a great kid. I'm telling you, her motor is off the chart. I mean, it's just that kid is highly motivated, works extremely hard, listens. She's become a great help defender. Her defense has gotten so much better. And that's why our team, quite frankly, defensively, we've gotten better here in the last 2 weeks because her help is so much better. Now, the rest of our team has improved also in that regard, but she's usually your last line of defense. And if that kid won't rotate and block shots, alter shots, or take a charge, it can be a lot of heartache for those guards giving up dribble penetration. And especially the way we like to play with pressure. So Charlie's done a great job. You've seen her. She gets in the press, and she's gotten a steal or two down there in the press, which is fun to watch. 6'5", athletic, long, quick kid down there pressing and enjoying it, you know, really embracing it. So I think give her credit for embracing the defensive part. And now she's the national finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, I couldn't be more proud of her.
And what are some of the issues that y'all will discuss about her future and whether she turns pro or comes back for another year? What are those issues?
Well, I think it's, you know, she's got, you know, her and her mom and I'm here if they want, you know, my input, but I think they've got their ideas on what's in front of them. And, you know, to be projected where she's projected, you know, it's an incredible, you know, opportunity. It's an easy decision, but then there's also some other factors that, you know, people may or may not know, whether it's about the league or, you know, anything. I mean, you know, I've had two kids, Tierra McCown and Victoria Vivians, both could come out early and never even thought about it. They just enjoyed college. You know, they enjoyed college life. They enjoyed college. They enjoyed the college game. This is what hurts in my heart for my kids is that our kids can't enjoy our style of play and playing in front of 8, 9, and 10,000 people. You know, when we're going on that run against K-State, we're turning them over, laying it in, turn it over, laying it in, turn it over. That's when 8, 9, 10,000 sounds like 50,000, you know, in an arena. I mean, it gets loud and it crescendos, and that's the environment that's fun to play in. You don't get that environment at the next level.
Right.
You know, I remember going and watching Victoria play and her coming down the tunnel after the game going, man, coach, I miss college. She goes, two things. One, you know, it's a business. The game is, you know, they're, you know, our fans, we don't have the involvement with our fans that we had, you know, when I was in college. She said, two, when I get beat off the bounce, there ain't Blair standing there getting a charge or, you know, or Tori blocking it in the fifth row. She goes, when I get beat off the bounce, it's a layup. And she said, you know, I miss having my teammate. So, you know, it's her decision, and we're going to support her, love her, and be excited for whatever she wants and whatever she does. And, you know, it's been a real fun for me to coach her. I love the kid. She is a good, great kid, and I've enjoyed coaching her and teaching her. And again, it's always fun as a coach when you have somebody like Charlie whose motor is just off the chart. I mean, she, you know, anybody that gets to coach her, you're coaching a kid that wants it. And, yeah. And man, in coaching, that's what you want.
Well, I'm sure you might mention once or twice to her and her family, like, you know, we've got 3 McDonald's All-Americans coming in next year. You think you're Irish now? Wait till next year when you get those 2 guards here on campus.
You know, that's the thing, you know, and again, that's probably, you know, I don't, it's hard to come across with that, but I mean, it's so true. I mean, I think
fine, Vic. Do it, Vic.
Yeah.
Do it, Vic.
We're going to be a chance to be really special next year. And obviously if she was here, man, we could really be, I think we could be a really special team. And I think we're going to be special. You know, we'll be really good next year. But if, you know, she was part of that group, man, and you talk about a group that could be fun to watch and be hard to deal with now, it could be fun. So, you know, again, I'm going to support her and love her whatever her decision is. And I know it's a big decision for her, and she's worked really hard, y'all, to put herself in this position. So I'm excited for her, whatever she decides. And again, I'm going to support her and love her for that.
Well, is there anything you want to say about these McDonald's All-Americans getting 3-in-1 class? I mean,
and it's, you know, it's, What a tremendous job my staff did. These are some great kids, boy. You talk about some wonderful kids from some great families, and talented. And you know, to get 3-in-1 class is really hard to do. I think somebody told me us Connecticut, South Carolina, maybe had 3. You know, in that class. And just really, but you know, y'all, this is what Texas commands. This is what is warranted. It's what's, you know, I expect, you know, we expect as a staff to do every year. Certainly every year won't be like this, but you know, when you have an opportunity, 2 of them are from Texas, 1's from Oklahoma. You know, you got to go get that done. And I am so excited about all 3 of those kids. Again, boy, they're gonna impact our program in a hurry. I need them to, you know, we need them to be able to come in and impact us in a hurry. Then you throw in the 2 junior college kids that are both, depending on what service you look at, number 1 in the country.
Nice.
You know, Kobe's 6 foot, can play 2, 3, 4, stretch you, go off the bounce, has a mid-range game. Fem is 6'5". I just read something on her last night. She's averaging double-digit rebounds. And she plays on a team where she didn't play 30 minutes a night. You know, she plays like 15, 16 minutes a game, and she's getting double-digit rebounds and shooting. I don't think she's missed a free throw all year.
Wow.
And for a big kid, that's pretty good.
Wow.
you know, excited about just about that class. And again, helping these kids that are here, because we've got some good players here. They just need, you know, we need to add depth to our roster. And I think we've done that. Again, we'll be young again, but we'll be talented.
Well, listen, we loved having you on. Hopefully we'll do it again sometime next month as it gets even more serious. But good luck in the game with Kansas tonight, and appreciate it. And hope you don't have to stand in line at Papa John's or Domino's. You can go to the front of the line. Okay?
More product, Vic, more product.
When I came out, you know, I had that pizza in my hand, that guy was unloading. I asked him, I said, what's in the U-Haul truck? I mean, it kind of looked, you know, and he said, we're from Killeen. We're bringing more dough and more product to this guy, 'cause he's out. And I'm, you know, I said, well, you need some help? And he goes, no, we got
Oh, man, just so glad to be back in real Texas weather. That's all I got to say, man.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Vic. Thanks for sharing some moments with us, and good luck down the rest of the season, okay?
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me this morning. Praise the Lord and hook 'em horns.
All right. Take care, Vic.
On Second Thought.
Well, Duck, let's talk a little bit. I mean, we're gonna hit Tiger Woods here before we get out of here. But people want to know what went on at our households. I mean, I got some emails and I got some text messages from friends who listen to the podcast to check on us. And I'd like to thank everyone for checking on me and making sure that my family's fine. Duck, I know I lost power. I'll start. I'll let everybody know. I lost power late Sunday night, about 11 o'clock. And I was like, uh-oh, it's cold outside. That was the first thing I thought. It's cold outside. And I just lost power. And I've been in this house. We've been in here for about 12 years. Never burned the fireplace. You chastised me last week. You said, you need to enjoy your house. Build a fire. And so I had some logs from HEB, 10-year old logs that
still work.
They're still wood, and they worked. And Sunday night, I slept in front of the fireplace on the couch, and I traded a couple of logs for matches from next door. I didn't have any matches in my house. I don't smoke or anything. And then Monday it got even colder. It was even worse on Monday. And so my electricity, my power came back late 3 a.m. Wednesday morning. So almost 48 hours without power. But shout out to my neighbors, Mike and Sandra Alvarez. So after I traded those logs, Sandra sent me over some barbecue ribs, pork steak, ranch style beans.
Oh, stop. Kill them,
grilled baked potato.
Oh, man.
And a big old bottle of iced tea and two pieces of cheesecake.
Boy, you do owe them.
I was like, man, I might die tonight, but I'm gonna die with a full stomach and a smile on my face. But I wake up at 3:30 a.m. Wednesday morning. And I go, and I'm literally sleeping under five blankets, Duck. It is so damn cold. And I wake up and I go, man, it feels good in here. Cause I slept upstairs, cause the fireplace just wasn't giving me enough heat. And I piled on those blankets and I was insulated. And I was like, boy, these blankets are doing the job. And then I stuck my arm out from under those blankets and I go, it feels good in here.
Oh.
And I reached out, eyes still closed, Duck. I reached out and I clicked that lamp on, and the Lord said, let there be light.
Thank you, Benjamin Franklin.
I was so excited. It was 3:30 a.m. Immediately, first thing you do, Duck, you turn on the television. Because I had no television for 3 days. Turn on the television, and the Australian Open is all on. Rafael Nadal's in that five-set match that he lost. I watched all of that match from 3:30 to 6, smile on my face.
I was never, and I wouldn't crank the heat up too, because I was just so happy to have electricity. So what happened with you?
Oh, we always had power the whole week. We didn't have much heat. We're on propane gas here. And the heat for our subdivision, the propane gas tanks went empty. So I would say we didn't have heat for, mostly I would say like 4 days. And when we were sleeping, it was in the 40s. And I'm not a cold guy. So we live in Texas for a reason. And then we didn't have running water all week. And then we discovered we had a pipe burst.
Oh, my.
It was in the back of the house. It was in the wall. And we did not get water in the house, but we lost a lot of water in the back near the foundation. And, I mean, that happened Wednesday, maybe Tuesday night. It was Wednesday afternoon before we even discovered it. So it was hard getting a plumber. And I'm sure I'm talking to a lot of people that are nodding and yet tell me about it. Because even though that happened Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, I wasn't able to get a plumber till Sunday night. So we didn't have running water pretty much from Monday until about 7:30 Sunday night. So no showers, no drinking water, no toilets. I made several trips to HEB. So
I bet.
Yeah. And so – yeah, mostly it's just the no heat and drove my wife crazy not being able to shower. But Rondo Tulo brought us some water and our neighbors brought us some water. They had four-wheel drive and could get out. We couldn't get out of our driveway or on the icy streets. So thanks to Nima and Sophia and Rondo Tulo for bringing us some water. But it just shows you how blessed you and I are to live in Austin and have neighbors that are caring. And you wrote a great column about some of the former Longhorn athletes and current Longhorn athletes who have this humanitarian philanthropic side to them. And anybody from, Quandre Diggs, Michael Huff, Charlie Collier, who gave back to the community. And I donated to the ATX Foundation for the Austin Adult Urban League too. And I couldn't get out to do stuff like that, but I just admire people like that. And you wrote a really nice story pointing it out. And it was nice to see athletes like that giving back to the community.
Yeah. And you think about how blessed we are to have a platform to inform people, to give our perspectives, and also to help the community. And when I saw what people like Michael Huff and Malik Jefferson, Charlie Collier, Tevin Jackson, Nicole Denby, I mean, the list goes, Colt McCoy, the list goes on and on. I just read that Terrell Brown is feeding people in Mesquite. And so Texas X's are just doing great work. I got a chance to talk to Michael Huff about his venture. Michael Huff is not a talker. Huff doesn't like doing interviews.
No, he doesn't
But Michael Huff's actions kind of spurred people. Malik Jefferson goes, well, I got involved because Michael Huff got involved. Quandre Diggs, well, I reached out to Michael Huff. So the younger kids see the OG, Michael Huff, doing work in the community, and they wanted to get involved. And so I asked Michael Huff about this, and this is what Mike had to say.
And Mike, I talked to a couple of fellow Texas exes that following your example, they saw that you were helping, and that's the reason Malik Jefferson, Quandre Diggs both said, well, we want to do what Huff's doing as a senior Texas ex compared to those younger guys. How does that make you feel to know that you're leading by example and inspiring others to help as well?
Really, I'm just trying to pass it on to everybody behind me, like really anybody above me. So, I mean, I watch like Corey Redding and those guys that do so many great things for the community. And you know, so I kind of learned from them, like Quentin Jammer, Nathan Basher, all those guys. So I kind of learned from them. So like, okay, I took what I've learned from them and I try to pass it down to, you know, everybody after me. And even now being on staff, I try to, you know, kind of talk to the young guys. Hopefully guys on staff or on the team now can see that and you know, whether they go play 10 years in the NFL or whether they're just moms, dads, you know, just family men, maybe they'll still be able to give back just any way they can. Because there's really not a certain number, you know, give 2,000 meals or 3,000 meals. It can be by 1 meal for this one family, and that's still making an impact in somebody's lives. So really, that's really the main thing, trying to get it out that it's not one large event. You can buy 1 meal for somebody, and that, you know, it does the same thing as buying 2,000 meals.
How many times did your phone ring over the last week from fellow Texas exes?
It's been a lot. And the crazy part is, like, they all want to kind of jump in and help and donate. I tell them, like, I don't really have a plan. It's not like I sit down on Mondays, like, okay, on Tuesday, I'm donating 2,000 meals to this place. It was kind of just random. Like, I might be on Instagram, I might be on Twitter, and, you know, somebody in my comments or DM said, you might want to call this place, they need help. I was like, okay, I'll reach out to that place. So it was really nothing planned or scheduled. It just kind of just happened. So I thought I want to help my hometown, so I would try to do stuff in Irving. But for the rest of it, it's just, I mean, I just kind of just do it.
So, Duck, it's just a great, it's great when you have people that figure out that I can be a conduit to making someone's horrible experience a little less horrible, bringing a little light into some darkness. And to me, it just makes the world a lot better place.
It really does. And the times when we were colder than we've ever been in Austin, where you get the temperatures in single digits, it literally warms our hearts, you know, to see these people giving back. And not a shout out to the Austin FC soccer team and Matt Beasler and Brad Stuver, the goalkeeper, and they started a GoFundMe account and raised, I don't know what it is now, it's probably approaching $40,000. And this is a soccer team and players that have been here a month, you know, don't know Austin. And they're already trying to embrace the community. And it's very heartwarming to see.
And before we go, our colleague, former Statesman colleague, Kevin Robbins.
Right.
Huge, huge activist, helping students, raising money for students, feeding them, getting water for people who needed it on campus through the Safe Horns organization, teaming up with Colt McCoy, just doing work. And the one thing we hated this storm. We never want to go through this storm again. But the feel good stories that came out of it, Duck, were just. Yeah. Were really heartwarming, and it made me feel good to be part of such a great community.
And you mentioned Charlie Collier. I mean, she's a current athlete. You know, some of these exes that are either pro athletes or they have jobs. Here's a student doing it out of the goodness of a heart.
50 pizzas she delivered.
You know, to fellow students and people that need the help. And it just kind of restores your faith in humanity when a lot of times, you know, we talk about other instances like the riot at the Capitol and stuff like this. But this is a reminder of how good Americans and specifically Austinites and UT athletes can be.
Speaking of America, an American icon, an international icon, Tiger Woods, up against it again, a near tragic automobile accident in California, crushed injuries to his legs.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound good at all. Compound fracture, shattered ankle. This isn't even about golf.
No.
Whether or not he plays golf again, to me, doesn't really matter. But the fact that a father of two nearly lost his life just doesn't have a very good history when it comes to automobiles. I mean, the traffic stops, the incident with his ex-wife, just, you know, now all of this weeks after the documentary on HBO came out, it just seems like Tiger, just as blessed as he's been, and he's lived a great life money-wise and traveling, and he's an icon, doesn't seem to be able to catch too many good breaks in his personal life.
No. And a lot of people would say, well, it's of his own making. And a lot of it was. And
absolutely.
A lot of people, we all know that. We're not excusing any bad behavior. But yeah, these crashes it was so unfortunate. And we're so lucky it wasn't a bigger tragedy than it was. Now, he's going to have major issues with his legs and ankle, as you pointed out. But it's just I'm just glad that we still have him around. And you and I talked before we taped this podcast. You know, if we'd have lost Tiger in the same city where we lost Kobe just a year ago, to lose two icons in sports like that would have just been so egregious and so painful for so many people, because, you know, those are two people that have not just shaped the sport that they thrived in, but they had impact on people. And, you know, we could talk all day on what Kobe meant to young kids playing basketball and what Tiger.
And to the current guys, they were devastated.
They were devastated. And then like, you know, Tiger opened the world of golf to minorities and young people and non-golfing fans. And just, I don't know if, you know, short of maybe a Jackie Robinson, I'm not sure if one person had an impact on his sport quite like Tiger Woods, because it transcended golf.
It did. It was a largely white sport, a largely elite sport. Definitely. And Tiger, a middle-class kid, battled some racism coming up on country club courses, and was toughened up by his father, a Green Beret. And so the story of Tiger Woods exposing this sport to the masses. My father never watched golf when I was growing up in the 70s. But when Tiger took over the sport, my dad was glued to that screen.
Yeah.
My dad, an old black dude who's been through some things and who had been through some things in his life, was just so happy to see a black kid playing a sport that was mostly white, doing things that were not allowed only three or four decades earlier. So, you know, the Lee Elders and the Calvin Peets were the rarity. And now you bring in Tiger Woods, and it just opens it up. You see a guy like Tony Finau on the verge of maybe breaking through because of the Tiger influence. So I'm glad he's still with us. And thank God for airbags, and thank God for his grace, because Tiger Woods could have left here, Duck. I mean, that the wreckage told us as much on that car.
Yeah, and the elevation, I think it was like 700 feet elevation from where the road was when he left it to the where the car landed. And he is lucky to be alive. And who knows if he'll play golf again. We hope for him a speedy and strong recovery, but in so many respects, it's incidental. You know, he's shaped the game like few others. He and Jack Nicklaus are always going to be the most famous two golfers in that sport. But, you know, it's just, you want him. He's seen the error of his ways, and you and I don't, we're not close to him. I've probably covered, you know, I don't know, 30 of his tournaments that he's played in. He was here in Austin at the Dell tournament. You know, 2 years.
Yeah, we interviewed him. We got to interview him for that.
Yeah. So, you just, you know, it's sad that it happened, and it's just a reminder how fragile life can be and how we need to treasure it. The blizzard taught us the same thing, and, you know, 80 people died because of this great winter storm that we all suffered through. So it's just a reminder for us to treasure life and to hold dear the people that mean the most to us.
Absolutely, brother. And it's been a pleasure getting back on the podcast, taking a little winter storm hiatus, but we're back, and we'll be back next week. And this has been a wonderful, wonderful podcast. Big thanks to Vic Schaefer for joining us. We will hit you again next week, and that will do it for episode 210 of On Second Thought. For the Duck, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.